Welcome to KCSB's Public Affairs Spotlight. My name is Kat Swift, and I'm speaking with Sherry Barnes, Scholarly Communications Program Coordinator at the UCSB Library. And we're going to be talking about the university's recent decision to cancel its contract with Elsevier, one of the world's largest publishers of scholarly academic materials and scientific research. So it's a significant move on the part of the UC system. So welcome, Sherry, to KCSB's Public Affairs Spotlight.
Thank you for having me, Kat. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And you're the expert on this whole thing. You're the one that has been sending out the communications about the contract termination and keeping everybody abreast about this. What can you say about this rather momentous decision?
Well, I do think it is historic and will completely change the future of scholarly communication. We have, you know, been talking about open access and reforming the scholarly communication system for a number of years. UC has passed a number of open access policies. We have published the Pathways to Open Access report early last year. So this didn't actually occur in a vacuum. And with the Plan S developments in the European Union, as well as the Open Access OA 2020 initiatives, we're at a confluence now of activities where real change seems to be happening. UC has really standing by its principles with Elsevier in the sense that we were committed to making sure UC authors' research was publicly available, because the research obviously is created and produced and written by UC scholars. It's funded by federal research agencies like the NSF and the NIH. And then the research is handed over to the scholarly publishing companies that are very profit-driven as opposed to mission-driven. And then the library buys all of that research back, publicly funded research, you know, created by UC scholars. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a real inequitable situation. And once UC had sort of decided that on a set of principles and stuck by them, it really made a huge difference in our ability to, you know, be a part of this very, you know, momentous change that's going to be happening. And because UC is in the unique position where our scholars, UC scholars, contribute to 10% of the peer-reviewed scholarly research output out there. I mean, that's more than any single institution worldwide, really. So we're in a really unique position to lead, which people will look at us and say, well, if we're able to do it, then they could do it as well. Right. And so we're just one institution in the U.S., but we're a very big, influential one. And many institutions or countries in Europe have already done the same. So I think the combination of UC's actions combined with Germany's actions and Finland's action and others, Norway has canceled their deals, and many UC institutions are now starting to cancel their deals. And moreover, they're really supporting UC. They're going to make sure that, you know, UC is able to make sure that our scholars have access to the articles that we will no longer have access to in the immediate future. So I think we're just well positioned.
Well, and the heart of the dispute, as far as I understand it, is that the UC system pays Elsevier, you know, millions, tens of millions of dollars every year to have access to these articles in their database, but they're cost prohibitive. They're more expensive every year, and the university simply cannot afford to continue paying these exorbitant prices that Elsevier is charging, basically a paywall on academic research. And so the university just basically just said, no, we're not we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to push for the open access movement. And the idea behind open access is basically freedom of information and freedom of academic research.
Mm-hmm. The idea behind open access is scholarly literature available free online with limited or no copyright restrictions. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean nobody's paying. What UC was asking Elsevier for was to use our subscription dollars, and as you said, UC subscription to Elsevier's 1,200 journals, that's about how many we subscribe to, is about $10 million system-wide. UCSB share is about $800,000. And our idea and our commitment, the principles, were about using those subscription dollars, the money that's already in the system, for article publishing charges, which is one way that about 30% of open access journals get paid for. Instead of the readers paying through subscriptions, the authors and the institutions and the funding agencies pay through article publishing charges at the time that the article is accepted for publication in the journal. So we want to shift our subscription dollars to article publication fees so that when it comes time for students or researchers or clinicians, doctors, families to access the literature, they don't have to pay for it because it's already been paid.
Right, and it would be open access.
That was what that is, open access. It would be available to free to read online with limited or no copyright restrictions.
But that was exactly what Elsevier was resistant about. They didn't want to do that. They didn't want to allow the articles to be open access. They wanted to continue to keep them behind a paywall.
Elsevier will let the articles be open access for an additional charge.
Exactly.
So they wanted more money to do to allow open access.
Right.
And their most academic and scholarly journals currently are what we refer to as hybrid journals, which are subscription journals that institutions pay the institutional subscription rate for, but they will let individual articles in any issue of the journal be open access if the author pays an additional fee.
Right.
So the publishers are receiving a subscription fee from the institutions as well as a APC, article publication charge, which is optional from the author. So they're double dipping in that sense. And Elsevier wanted to continue that type of a system, but instead of and having us pay our subscription fees as well as having us pay the article publication fee. Mm-hmm. The Pathways to Open Access document that I mentioned a little earlier focuses on different strategies for how institutions and individuals can help facilitate the large-scale transition to open access. And one of those, and the focus of that is to redirect existing dollars that are in the system. And that's what Elsevier has been resistant to. And I want to say that Elsevier, even though, you know, they are the largest scholarly publisher out there, they're one of several that we deal with, one of many that we deal with. And others have been open to this, these new principles of ours. And I suspect that we will see the type of deals that we were trying to get with Elsevier with other publishers.
Okay.
So this is just a beginning.
Right.
And we're not targeting just Elsevier. We're targeting the scholarly communication system as a whole.
Right. Yeah, because it's significant in the sense that the cost of education is already pretty high for most students. And it's also the materials. It's the books. It's the articles. It's the
Absolutely.
Access to research. And so this becomes then a burden for students when they have to pay these exorbitant prices for access to educational materials, mm-hmm. books, articles, and such.
Well, the readers that students are carrying around, these tomes of, you know, information that their professors are requiring them to read, are filled with articles from academic and scholarly journals. And the cost of those readers would, you know, drop considerably if they weren't having to pay for the copyright and the cost of those articles,
yeah.
because they would have already been paid for.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing.
It would almost eliminate the need for readers because the information, the articles would be available full text online, and professors just have to sign a URL or DOI to the article online.
Wow. Okay.
And there would be no paywall. I think we have all experienced, you know, trying to access literature online and running up against a paywall that says you have to pay $30, $40 to get this article, which is another source of revenue for the publishers. Right. In addition to the institutions paying, and in the hybrid context, we've got the authors paying. And then there are individual consumers that are paying who aren't part of institutions that subscribe to these journals. So, and that's, Elsevier has the highest profit margins of any company, any global company out there. I mean, that's significant.
Because
higher than Apple and, you know, Google.
And what do? They're just a database, a bank of information, a database of information. Information that they haven't created, information that they haven't published, information that they haven't peer-reviewed, information that they haven't put any effort into, that they just basically take for free, put it in a repository, and then charge everybody for having access to it.
Providing access to digital scholarship, you know, isn't cheap, and it is easy. And they do, you know, make it very easy for scholars to access if you are paying for the information. But there was a time, you know, in this country and worldwide where scholarly publishing was controlled by the societies, the academic and scholarly societies. And they were very mission-driven. Their mission was to ensure that the literature and the research was made as widely available as possible. It has changed to the point where this overwhelming majority of the scholarship is now controlled by profit-driven commercial publishers and entities.
Right.
And so part of the scholarly communication reform efforts in the open access movement is to return control and ownership of the scholarly literature that is, you know, paid for by the public for the most part, that is, you know, peer-reviewed, edited, researched, and written by scholars who are paid by academic institutions and not publishers, to return control of that system and that scholarship to the societies, to the academic institutions, and under the control of the scholars who have created it and want it to be read widely.
Right. Well, it seems to me to go to the heart of the whole question about the future of education in the United States, because we're seeing the privatization of education at the K-12 level and also at the higher education level.
Our scholars write about the neoliberalization of the university and society all the time. The scholarly publication, the scholarly communication system, scholarly publishing is like the epitome of that. As I just described, it was for the most part a public system controlled by societies and scholars and institutions and funded through the public that is now controlled by, you know, profit-driven commercial private entities.
Right.
Shareholders.
Exactly. And it's part of the internet's monetization scheme, where more and more of the future of the internet, if we continue in this direction, is basically the monetization of information. And then what does that mean for freedom of information and the right to have free speech and free and open public dialogue on issues? I think this is a huge area. So I'm very pleased to see UC step up to the bat and take this stance for freedom of information and open access.
In addition to being, you know, uniquely positioned to where, you know, we contribute to so much of the scholarship that's out there, one thing that also made this really possible is that UC was really united in this. And, you know, I've been here for a long time, and I've watched the open access and scholarly communication, scholarly publishing debate go in all different directions. But this is the first time where the faculty, the librarians, and the administrative leadership from Napolitano down were all on the same page and behind this.
Right.
And that type of unification was infectious. And as you know, we've seen in the media coverage, universities all over the country and the world have been stepping up and saying, yay, hooray, UC. This is exactly what we needed. And I think this type of leadership is really going to change the future of scholarly publishing and access to information for people globally.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Thank you so much, Sherry Barnes, for speaking with us today. And for our listeners out there, you've been listening to KCSB's Public Affairs Spotlight. And please join us again next week.